listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 212 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
As ever, if you want to check out notes for this episode, you can do so over at nerdsassemble.co.uk. If you want to tweet us your displeasure or pleasure, you can do so at Nerds Podcast. But this week, we're talking about... It's a weird mashup of episodes. I only understand the connection between two because I've only, well, two shows because I've watched those. And the other, I don't quite understand where it falls in, but I'm assuming the polls will explain.
I think there's been a lot of talk. Basically, the shows that we're going to be discussing tonight are Star Trek Discovery, The Orville, and the Black Mirror episode. Was it USS Callister?
Yes.
And, so, obviously, uber recent, so...
There will be spoilers.
Yeah, there will be spoilers. Well, to be honest, I'm quite impressed with Discovery and Orville so far.
I like both.
I'm on record of saying that.
No, I totally agree. I've really started to enjoy Orville. I'm on episode 6 or 7, I think. It's quite a nice little nod to The Next Generation.
It definitely has the Star Trek-y feel, and I do feel like there's kind of a split in Trekdom between like people who like Star Trek Discovery and people who like Orville, and yeah. It's kind of the new Star Wars Star Trek split, isn't it, really?
Yes, but they should just embrace both because they've got both got perks.
Is this yet another of those, oh, there's a fan split, and I'm sitting here going, yeah?
Well, yeah, there's no reason why there should be a fan split. I mean, for me, the Discovery has taken Star Trek in a different direction as opposed to other shows. It's showing the sort of darker side of the Federation, which is quite nice.
And not just like a Section 31 type thing. Although, to be honest, a series of that could actually be quite good. But
well, there is a rumour, isn't there?
Nope.
There's a big theory that the Discovery is the start of Section 31, hence the uniforms being slightly different.
That can't be
part
right.
Of Section 31.
That theory can't be right, considering they had Section 31 from Enterprise.
Yeah, or being part of Section 31. Hmm. Those are the two main theories that I've read online. Hence why we've never really heard of the Discovery before, because it was all done in hush hush Section 31 style.
Unsure about that.
Like I say, it's just a theory that's out there.
Okay, so the latest episode, because obviously listeners could be listening in the future, episode that we've watched is In the Mirror Universe.
Yes.
Yep.
And, we've basically found out that Ash has been somehow taken over. By the Klingons.
Altered.
Yeah, altered in some respect.
Yeah, we watched, just before, starting to record this, we watched the latest one, which was just released, this morning.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, so the second episode in the Mirror Universe, and it's like, I'm glad it's going in a direction I like, and I'm glad they've done something. I'm trying not to spoiler it because it's people haven't, watched it.
No.
Well, we have. It's just Cookie.
Okay. So you've seen both episodes in the Mirror Universe?
Yeah.
Oh, right. No, I haven't seen the second one. I saw the first one, but not the second one. And the first one was bloody good.
The second one is also very, very good.
Does it tie in why he's got the skeleton of the Gorn there?
Not yet.
No.
Okay. Mr. Retroy knows what I'm talking about then.
Yes.
Cool. Another theory. Bonus. But yes. No, I will be watching that tomorrow, to be fair. So, which is good. But no, I like the direction Discovery's taken, and it's for me, it's breathed fresh air into the Star Trek franchise. It's gone into a nice direction.
I've always thought that Star Trek has been at the mercy of its time and its method of distribution. Hmm. When, you know, with the original series, they famously made one pilot.
Yep.
And then that got rejected, but the network then commissioned a second one, which was, you know, unusual. I think that was possibly a first at the time. On the condition that they just sort of, you know, made it more punchy, kicky, sort of, you know, fighty 60s TV.
Mm. Yes.
Type thing.
Action romance.
And yeah, so the original series was we've gone through that before. So, you know, yeah, the original series is of its time and of its network. And then when it came to Next Generation and, you know, the various series around that, they were less bound by the same issues. Mm. But in another way, because they were choosing to do it all, you know, in syndication from the off, they didn't have a network to put it on at that time. It had to, you know, be in a certain TV rating, and they tried to, you know, make sure that it wasn't too story arc-y because that wasn't a done thing at the time. Yeah. And that always drove me mad because I wanted big story arcs. So
yes.
I was quite happy with, you know, later DS9 when it started doing, you know, things like that. It wasn't perfect, but it was more like what I could envision for, you know, the Star Treks.
Yes.
And then of course you get to Discovery, and I'm very pleased that it's turning out the way it is, because it's kind of the Star Trek I wanted. In that, you know, they're not hostages to, oh, everyone has to wear, you know, the women have to wear little, you know, very high cut, dresses.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like that. It's set a certain period in, you know, Trek canon, but it's very much a modern TV series with its ideas from Star Trek.
Yes, and with some very good ideas as well.
Yeah, so as far as I'm concerned, you know, the people who have an issue with Star Trek Discovery can fuck off. That's my capsule summary. It's just, yep. You've not paid attention to other Star Treks if you think that they're doing things with, you know, which are radically different with, you know, like, you know, the spore drive and using mushrooms. It's, yeah. Wesley Crusher had an alien friend that could create warp parallel dimensions with the power of his mind.
Do you like the theory around that as well?
I have no issue with it. I think it's an all right theory.
No, I mean the theory that sort of joins that they're trying to join the Traveller to Discovery.
What is that? What's the theory with that?
So, Paul, the person who gets stuck in the spore drive, who becomes ill, he is actually the Traveller. He becomes the Traveller.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I haven't. What?
Yeah. So the theory goes is that the interaction of the spore drive is what creates the Traveller, who is actually Paul. And because he can travel into different realities and create the warp drive sensors and everything, lives longer, and then meets Wesley Crusher.
Well, there are always downsides.
Yes, but that's another...
I think that's reaching slightly.
I think there's ideas, and then there's no, everything has to, you know, tie in and be directly.
But it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. No, it doesn't.
And to be fair, they have actually said that they're not actually going to. In an interview I saw the other day, they were saying that they're waiting until season two to really tie into the canon of the original series.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they said it was. So, you know, they've actually got that lined up, but that won't be until season two, they were saying. And then you'll see some more of its ties to how it goes into the original series then, which is quite nice. So, but I do like the other little fan theories that are coming out as well, and how they are, some of them I really enjoy, and how they're trying to tie everything into the Star Trek universe as we know and love it, which is quite nice.
See, some fan theories, you know, I enjoy them, you know, people coming up with them, because, you know, it's always good to come up with, you know, fan theories and, you know, how things work.
Yeah.
Ooh, could this be, you know, definitely. That? And then, you know, on the other hand, it's like, you know, just not everything has to be about this or that.
Tying it all together, yeah.
Yeah.
It can go off into a slightly different direction if it needs to.
Yeah, I can be very pleased to have things like Star Trek Continues that have the, you know, the same pastel lit sets and, you know, Brill Cream in the hair and, you know, all the, you know, original uniforms and things like that. I can watch those and I can enjoy them because they're really well made. And then, you know, so that can be a thing separate. And I'm happy. Not everything has to conform.
That's fair enough. Bonus.
Okay, moving on to the Orville now.
Oh, next generation with dick jokes.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it
is.
To be honest, it does surprise me the mix of Seth MacFarlane-type humour, but still, like, far more Star Trek-y than I was... you know, thinking that it was.
It was. I mean, I watched the first episode, and obviously, in the first episode, you had quite a lot more, as Retroid put it, dick jokes than you do in the other episodes that I've seen. So I was a little bit unsure after watching the first episode, and then I watched the second and third episode as they were picking up more of the science side of things like Star Trek Next Generation did and bringing in the morals and ethics. And I have to say, I'm really chuffed with it. It's a really good homage to Next Generation. And yeah, I can see why people are saying that's more like their version of Star Trek than perhaps Discovery, because it is basically a homage. But I still think you can enjoy both of them, because they are both separate entities, you know, because the Orville's got some great characters and some great stories as well.
The Orville is a really weird mix. I've mentioned before the Seth MacFarlane talking, you know, in the writer's room extra on the Star Trek Next Generation Season 3 Blu-rays. And it very much comes through that he is a massive, you know, Next Generation fan. And, you know, he's saying about, oh, what, you know, such and such in this episode. And the writers are going, eh? Oh, yeah. And it really warmed me towards Seth MacFarlane.
Yes.
I've never been a huge fan of his. But, with this... I probably would have watched Orville because it's sci-fi. And it's like, oh, go on, let's give it a go. But yeah, it very quickly gets into episodes that could have slotted into
Next Generation.
Next Generation or DS9 or the other Star Trek series which also exist.
Voyager.
The other Star Trek series which also exist.
Enterprise?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I mean, Seth MacFarlane was in an episode of Enterprise.
Yes, he was. So, point for, you know, bringing that up. But, just last night we finished watching in the, you know, thanks to Dave Internet, because FX was being really slow with the episodes.
Yeah.
I just thought, bollocks to this. We do have a TV package which, you know, has these, but, you know, they're coming up late. It's okay, you know, for the podcast, and just because I was enjoying watching the episodes, to my, you know, very quick surprise, you know, get them downloaded. And yeah, so we've finished the first 13 episodes, which I think is that the full first season?
I'm not 100% sure.
I believe so, but again, I'm not 100% sure. But it has been renewed for a second season.
Yeah, I'm happy with that because, yeah, they were very Next Generation. Watching them, including one which was, you know, I'm to the point now where I'll, you know, we'll be watching them and I'll say to my wife, oh, this is like that episode of, you know, and it will be, you know, Voyager or Next Generation, where this happens. And she just looks at me in that way with the, oh, bless. You massive nerd.
Yeah, just
and I've got thumbs up. Yeah.
I just checked that.
Yeah, so we finished the first season and I'm quite happy with it. He's managed to keep his sense of humour toned down.
Yes, which is what I was worried about after watching the first episode.
Yeah.
But then it suddenly just drops down, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I think it really does come through that he wanted more Star Trek Next Generation.
Mm. Yes, I mean, definitely.
Considering, you know, the people, well, some of the people that are actually attached to it, just kind of looking through the Wikipedia page and say, for example, Robert Duncan McNeil, who played Paris, if I'm not mistaken, yes. Was actually directed the second episode.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And there's...
Jonathan Frakes directed the fifth episode.
Yeah, and Robert Picardo, who played EMH, who was the entire reason that Voyager was in any way watchable, was in a recent episode.
I mean, some of the special guests they've had on that show as well.
Yeah.
Toby threw me as well. I mean, you've some of the sort of cameos. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's like, oh, let's have a, you know, a captain on who's, you know, a little bit dodgy, but, you know, we want to, you know, a bit of a sort of a, you know, a sexy captain. Oh, let's just have Charlize Theron on.
Yes.
And he's like, what?
Yeah, that's right as well.
Yeah, Liam Neeson.
You haven't seen that episode, yeah?
Yeah, that was a real wow. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, it's just, you know, for it's Seth MacFarlane, and then I'm watching it, and it's a, there are sci-fi concept episodes, if you know what I mean. You know, the you know, there could be a short sci-fi short story about this. And in some cases, yes, they are riffing on, you know, episodes that exist in other series. And, yeah, but I've been quite impressed, including the episode where Bortas and his other half have a child, and it turns out that it's born female.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, God, Seth MacFarlane's doing a possible sex change. Oh, you know, gender realignment, you know, surgery thing, and it's just, oh god, this has got potential of being all, you know, awful.
Hmm.
But it wasn't. Yeah, it was handled really well.
Yeah.
I mean, from my perspective, obviously, because, you know, I can't speak from any other perspective. But yeah, I was surprised how it was handled. I thought, you know, this is, I think that was, you know, one of the first major hurdles that I managed to get past with me.
Hmm.
Where I saw plenty of people saying that, you know, there's no way I'm watching an episode about this that's got Seth MacFarlane in. It, you know, that's car crash territory.
Yes. Absolutely.
But, yeah, it wouldn't have been out of place for a Next Gen. And that's hybrid.
Definitely not. Definitely. Bring on season 2.
Yeah, I still think Isaac looks really cheap, though.
I think it's kind of made to be that way anyway.
Yes.
I know, but it does look like something from, you know, the 80s.
Like Metal Mickey.
Yeah, verging on that. Is that, I like the, you know, the faceplate.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, the gloves where it looks like they're, you know, articulated, you know, robotic.
Yeah.
But, you know, the rest of it, it just looks like it could be from Buck Rogers. So, yeah, bless him. But, to my surprise, I've ended up recommending the Orville to friends who, you know, who have enjoyed Star Trek and saying, yeah, watch the Orville too. It's like, yes, I know it's got Seth MacFarlane in. But it surprised me. It's worth watching. Mm.
Definitely.
I do wonder if they'll tone down the whole ex-wife thing. Because I think that is starting to get a little bit tedious.
They kind of have later on.
Oh, right, okay. Cool.
It sort of comes to a head, and then it's kind of backed away from.
Mm.
But yeah, I, you know, the first few episodes, it's like, yes, we get it. You two split up. Yes, shut up now. Do something else.
Move on.
Yeah. It's like, please, just drop it now.
I mean, I suppose in a way it's kind of refreshing that there's kind of basically a utopia, you know, kind of out there, as it were, and they still have personal problems.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with Star Trek Next Generation and stuff, like, a lot of the relationships kind of broke down because of just general kind of drifted apart or whatnot.
Yeah, that was always part of my issue with it, where if there was a relationship thing that needed to be sorted out, it would be the captain and Beverly Crusher have a, you know, an alien mind probe that tells their thoughts, and it's just, couldn't they just have a drink down 10 forward and have a bloody talk about it?
Yeah. Or they get shipped off to DS9.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, there's a relationship going, and say, yep, nope, you're buggering off because we need to cling on there.
yes, sod Deanna.
So, yeah. And it's just, you know, the various things, not all, you know, not everything has to be because of something happening in an episode. It can just be happening because.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Next Generation was always a little bit weird for its pacing in that way. Because it's, going back and watching it, you know, very early on, the Picard and Crusher thing, you know, was very full on.
Yes.
We have a thing, but we shouldn't.
Mm.
And then it just gets ignored for about 5 years. And then, oh, we've got a telepathic alien mind thing going on, and we have to talk about it. And he's, really?
Crazy. Couldn't
you just get bored of it?
Yeah.
Or maybe we should, such and such is going on, and Deanna walks in and just says, look, for fuck's sake, you two.
As
ship's counsellor, just sort it out.
Get a room and get it out of your systems.
Yeah, it's like, please, just bang and get it out of your system or something. I mean, I don't think that's a very, ship's counsellor way of doing things, but... could be. True. Who knows? I'm not trained.
Yes. So, we're all in agreement that the Orville's cool, Discovery is cool.
Yep.
Yeah, in different ways, which is...
In different ways, which is really nice.
Yes, yeah. It's because, I mean, if you swapped them over so that Orville was the kind of edgy one that, you know, kind of dealt with a lot of the stuff that Discovery is doing, and Discovery was more like the Orville, then I think there would definitely be a lot of people that would be like, well, screw the Orville, let's go to Discovery. But I think because it's so different, I think people can handle it, but
yeah.
Some people out there just read kind of comments by people turning around and saying, oh, watch the first two episodes of Discovery or watch the first two episodes of Orville and turn it off because it's crap. And it's like, you're kind of missing out.
It's, well, fine. Yeah, shut up and let everyone else just watch them then.
Yeah.
Although that's not how the internet works, is it?
No, no. It's you have to shout about all the crap stuff that you can't watch because it's absolutely terrible. And all the things that you like, you kind of have to keep shtum about just in case somebody else dislikes it.
True.
And I don't know about anyone else, but I don't have that much to watch. I have enough time to watch Discovery and Orville. I'm fine with this.
Okay, shall we move on to, that one episode of Black Mirror USS Callister?
I still think it's really weird that a bloke I used to read, in PC Zone, is doing a TV series like that and having, international celebrities either guesting or talking about it.
Mm. Mm.
It's still bloody, just bloody weird to me.
But to be fair, the Black Mirror series is so cleverly written.
Yeah.
So cleverly written. It's that's what captivates you. Well, for me anyway, it's the stories. Because, like USS Callister, to begin with, you're sort of feeling sorry for him. And you first see him in the first sort of 5-10 minutes where he's just ignoring him, even though he's the brains behind the whole thing and sort of treating him like an outsider. And then you actually see what he's been doing in his spare time and you think, ah, okay, this is a bit surreal.
What is that?
Oh, that's my cuckoo clock.
Right, okay.
Sorry, it's my Muppets limited edition cuckoo clock that plays the Muppets theme every single hour of the day.
Okay, that sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
Not at all. It's really cool. It's got all the gang there, including Statler and Waldorf in the balcony.
So, okay. Yes, well, anyway.
Which is cool. I've got a Star Wars one as well, but that's run out of batteries at the moment, so you won't hear the theme go off in a couple of minutes' time on that one.
So, yeah. Black Mirror.
Yes, Black Mirror. As I was saying, it's just so cleverly written. You're always sort of second guessing what the characters are like. And it's really cool.
Now for the USS Callister episode, the setup is a new intern starts at an internet company. That's responsible for a VR MMO.
Yes.
And she's really impressed to meet this, the co-creator of this, basically creator of this tech, this game that she's been.
Who is basically treated like an outcast by
the Yes. He's the one who does the tech, and his business partner, who's the one who gets the more personable one, he does all the PR.
Yes.
And is the public face of the company. He is the sort of Cliffy B type.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Cliffy B is like that, but he's the face.
He's the face, and he knows it. That's the problem, isn't it?
Yes.
He is a bit of an arrogant.
Yeah. And of course, the real creator of the tech, he's just, beavering away, and he doesn't feel appreciated. And it turns out that, the new intern who was so impressed with him gets steered away by his original business partner, who's the Cliffy B of the company, and
which reveals a darker side to this.
He resents this, and she's. She's warned away by various staff saying he's a little bit weird, he gets a little bit starey. So there's something up with him, and I think she's given a, you know, cup of coffee, this intern, and, you know, she drinks it and then leaves it on the desk. And the spurned creator, the, you know, underappreciated creator of the tech, quickly nabs the coffee cup and then puts it in a plastic bag. And then he takes it home, swabs it, puts it in a little, you know, machine, and it's, you know, talking about, you know, extracting DNA. And it turns out that anyone who he, you know, either ignores him or he feels, you know, slighted by, he creates a digital copy of, on his own private server, of his game.
Which follows the space fleet.
Yes, the very thinly veiled, obviously, you know, this is what it is, because everyone's in bright primary colours and everything.
Yes.
And he plays a very Kirk.
Oh, yes.
Before, you know, space fleet. And, of course, his crew are all, oh, you're so awesome, and, you know, you definitely beat the bad guy and such. And, yeah, the intern, or, you know, as she still thinks of herself, wakes up and she's wondering what the hell is going on. And, you know, she's told by, you know, the rest of the crew that, you know, basically play along. There's no way out.
Mm.
We are, you know, we are trapped here now. And kind of in a nod both to the, you know, the original series of Star Trek, which was, you know, sanitized, of course.
Yeah.
And for the, you know, any first thoughts of what the hell's going to happen when someone, you know, creates a digital copy and keeps them captive in their own virtual reality, there are alterations to their anatomy, as in they are Barbie dolls, more or less.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, so it's like, oh God, what's going to go on with this? It's like, no, it's not, the episode is, you know, only dark in the respect that they are sentient and they are copies. But yeah, there's no dodgy abuse that goes on in that way. And the rest of the episode is them trying to, or rather, you know, the new intern, because she's worked on the code, she thinks she can get messages out to herself, and there are ways to manipulate what's going on to, you know, maybe work out some way to free themselves from under him. And yeah, and that's how it goes. And basically, it is worth watching because it is a good episode.
It is a very good episode, very dark, but very good as well. Very cleverly written.
Yeah, it kind of has a happy ending as well. In that they do
it. Yes, it does. And it has a very funny nod to online gaming as well at the end.
Yes. King of Space!
Yes. Which I found quite amusing. You know, but yeah, it is very surreal, but and scary. I think that's the thing about Black Mirror as well. A lot of the episodes are quite dark and scary because you can actually, because it's so close to the tech today, you can actually see it happening.
Yeah.
In one way or another, which sort of just makes you think about things in a different light as well, which is a very powerful tool, I think.
Oh, also meant to say that his first officer on the ship is yes. Oh, what's his face from Westworld?
Oh yeah, I've seen him in a couple of things as well, but
he's been in quite a few things. He was in
he was also in House of Cards, American House of Cards, which is, you know, one of the first things I saw him in.
Jimmy Simpson.
Thank you, yes. So another example of them, you know, getting both British, because, you know, one of my first concerns when it went to Netflix was, can you not, you know, it's nice that you get a bit more money and you can make, you know, things which attract, you know, American stars, but can it also remain, you know, very, very British? And this season especially is very British. It's got some American you know, guest stars and such in, but yeah, it feels very British. So happy about that again.
Yes. Which is good.
It also has Michael Cole, who plays actually a couple of different characters throughout different series. And she's been known in Aliens, or The Aliens, or I think, and Chewing Gum.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so it was nice to see her.
Absolutely. And I might be lying to myself, but is one of the main women, the one that the newbie for the McAllister or Callister episode, is she the one that turns out to be the mother of the kids in How I Met Your Mother?
Yes, Tracy, yes. And she also had roles in Fargo.
Oh my God, spoilers. No, I don't actually care about that series, so spoil away.
How many of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, and she was also Teresa, the first wife in The Wolf of Wall Street as well.
All right. Okay.
Which, again, I have not seen either. No. I am doing well. What is this media of which you speak? These moving pictures.
So going back to the general theme, it feels like 2017 to 2018, there has been like a rediscovery of this kind of genre of TV show. The kind of ships flying in space with, you know, kind of a massive multi-species alliance type thing going on.
You might also call them a federation.
Yes, but I didn't want to use that term, but...
Yeah, but I will.
Okay.
But yes, there has been. It's been... I think they... I think the original... you know, Next Generation era, Star Treks, especially when you had Babylon 5 on at the same time as well. Yeah, I think there seemed to be an impression that that's enough. And I think that was more at the end of the, you know, the networks and the commissioning, you know, peoples.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, you know, we've had enough space stuff now. You know, people will, you know, got a bit bored. And then, of course, not only box sets, but things like Netflix have come along and, you know, they've got the, you know, the Star Treks. And they've realised that, oh, yeah, weirdly enough, people like these things and they like being able to watch lots of it. So, hey, let's put a little bit of money towards it. Like the rumour that the amount that Netflix paid for the rights to show the first season of Star Trek Discovery pretty much bankrolled it.
Yeah.
The whole thing of, yes, it's driven subscriptions for CBS. In CBS Digital or, you know, whatever, All Access. Is that it? All Access?
Yes, CBS All Access.
Yeah. So it's done well for CBS in the US, but of course it's been doing very well for Netflix. And Netflix can just throw this money around because it's got, you know, it's a worldwide concern.
Yes. To be honest, if it was up to America, I think because most people would probably watch it illegally or just skip it altogether.
Yeah.
And I think it would have died a death already if it hadn't have been for, you know, Netflix and the international market.
Yeah, I just think it's insane putting a series like that on, you know, a subscription only service like, you know, CBS All Access.
Yeah.
But apparently in America they've actually got it on Amazon now.
Do they? All right.
Apparently so, yeah.
Okay.
Spend a bit of money as well. But what you say is very interesting because, I mean, Riverdale's been quite successful for CW, but also been really successful in other countries due to Netflix having the rights to stream it at the same time. And then CW has set up a spin-off series of Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, which apparently will be a lot darker, a bit more sort of following this sort of dark side, like Supernatural. But Netflix have now actually bought the rights for, they are actually developing it themselves. They've brought the rights for themselves to tie into the Riverdale universe.
I'm still not convinced by the whole Riverdale thing.
No, but it's just proven how successful it has been, though, thanks to, again, like you said, you know, with Netflix's influence. Because it's, and that's mainly because other people in other countries can watch it straight away rather than having to wait X amount of months, years for somebody to snap it up.
It's an absolutely crazy idea that if you give people a way to watch something legitimately, then they will choose the legitimate way.
Stupid, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely maddening. It's just, if I can watch Star Trek Discovery within 24 hours of it being, you know, available in the US, because I was going to say broadcast, but it's not, is it? It becomes available at a certain time in the US.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm watching it in a very similar way to CBS All Access.
Yeah.
But if I can do that, then there's absolutely no point in me even thinking about, you know, checking up on my old mucker Dave Internet.
Absolutely. Because it's already there.
Yeah, it's already there, and I'm paying for it, and I'm happy to do so, yeah.
It's kind of why I was surprised why Fox picked up the Orville, but started showing it a lot later.
Yes.
Yeah, because in America, it's been going since, I think, September.
I mean, even Sky Atlantic have learned from that, haven't they, to be fair? I mean, Sky Atlantic are now broadcasting Game of Thrones pretty much. Well, they are broadcast at the same time as it is in American HBO at 2 o'clock in the morning. So if you've got Sky Plus, you can just record it at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's there ready for you in the morning. And that's helped bring the piracy down quite a lot. Not as much as they'd like, but it has done. And then they've got like this new series, Britannia. Lo and behold, all episodes are going to be available for you to binge watch on a Thursday.
Madness.
Mm. And the BBC have done that with a couple of things now, haven't they? They did that with Hard Sun as well. That new programme they were advertising quite a lot. If you actually go on the BBC iPlayer, all six episodes are already there.
Because I like iPlayer, but one of the major, you know, complaints I've had about it is when, say, if there's episode 5 or episode 6 of a series, like the Vietnam documentary series that they bought from PBS.
Yeah.
Which I've seen bits and pieces of it. It's very, very good, very thorough, explains a lot of what was going on.
Yes.
And yet I check on iPlayer because I think, well, if they're showing it that quick, I must be able to, you know, start it from the beginning. No, I can't.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah, and it's, oh, well done, golf clap. I'll just go and ask my old mate Dave Internet. If he's seen it. Oh, he has. And it's just, it's maddening. Yes, I know it's probably a rights thing, but if they can just work out when they're negotiating rights and when, you know, the originating, you know, production company is offering rights deals in the first place.
It'd make life a lot easier.
Yeah, it would make it a lot easier, and it's just, it stopped me from watching it properly.
Yeah, absolutely. Crazy. But never mind. But yes, I think we can all agree then that everybody should at least watch USS McAllister on Black Mirror.
Yep.
Orville and Discovery. Make the time. You will not be disappointed.
They are all good.
Yes. Which is nice for a change.
I mean, definitely going to keep on watching Discovery and Orville through season two, and hope that they continue to continue to be of such good quality.
Yes.
And I've sat through I've just been coughing away off mic, but I've sat through the first season of Star Trek Next Generation. So if I sat through that, I can sit through these, certainly.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Absolutely,
Because, oh my God, some of those episodes were shit.
I think, to be fair, part of the reason why they were shit was because weren't they kind of recycled original series episodes or something like that?
Some of them
definitely had an original series feel.
Yeah. it was pretty much... They were trying to work out how much of a direct influence they wanted the original series to be.
Yes.
Until they worked out that they could be their own thing.
And then they went pretty well from there.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
There was a lot more, let's go down to an alien planet with a different colour sky and dry ice in the first season of Next Generation.
Yeah.
No, that's how the Star Trek original series did Alien Planet. That's how we're going to do it. Until they realise, oh, we don't have to do that now. We can actually make it look not shit.
Absolutely. Discovery, the planets actually look far, far better.
Yes.
I mean, to be honest, I think they started getting better with that in Deep Space Nine slightly.
Yeah, they learned.
Yeah. I mean, some of the bits with, I think it was like at least one episode where they kind of crashed on a planet along with a Jem'Hadar ship, and they had to kind of, you know, sort out basically how they were going to do stuff.
Yeah. And the Jem'Hadar was stranded without their Ketracel White.
Yeah.
That's the one.
And that's
just from memory.
Yeah.
Show off.
But definitely Discovery's planets look and feel a lot more varied and more open as well. You're not kind of, you know, you haven't beamed down to like a small, almost kind of set or, you know, kind of meteorite crater or anything. You actually got like way up in space, like in the pilot episode of Discovery, where I think one of the first scenes was Michael walking along with her captain. You know, along kind of basically sand dunes, and you can see for miles ahead.
Yeah, we can do this crap now. Hurrah!
Absolutely.
Instead of, we're not standing on a sand stage that's been rented from, you know, like a beach from, you know, part of one of the Paramount lots, which is, you know, the kind of thing they had to do.
Yeah. And admittedly, the Orville kind of feels like it does do that whole...
It does a bit.
Yeah, it is kind of a in-a-bottle type thing.
But then I get the sense with that, it's kind of a, you know, Fox are making money off McFarlane's other stuff.
Mm.
And he's gone to them and said, I want to do this. And they've sort of just... so long as you can make it, you know, within a certain thing. Because we're cheap bastards.
So, I mean, how many shows has he got on the run at the moment? Because Family Guy's still going. American Dad's still going. I'm not sure whether the Cleveland show is still going or not. Obviously, he has like a TV, movie career as well. So, like stuff like Ted and was it A Million Ways to Die in the West or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I kind of enjoyed. I know a lot of people didn't like it, but yeah. No. I suppose Seth MacFarlane has that kind of effect on people.
I've just been very, I've watched a bit of Family Guy and then got bored with it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Then it's like, oh God, it's still going.
It's a bit like you Simpsons think,
in that regard.
Because you've got to think that, I mean, he's either a workaholic, so Seth MacFarlane, or because obviously he still does the voice work for, you know, most of, you know, Family Guy and stuff like that, as well as doing stuff like this, so... He can't be in control creatively, you know, of the stories and the jokes and whatnot.
True.
It's just not possible for him to be.
Yeah.
So I've got the feeling that...
He does, as you say, do all, you know, hell of a lot of the voice work. Yeah.
So,
and I'm pretty sure at this point he could just, you know, veto anything he wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think part of the problem is that, you know, they've obviously got writers that are trying to mimic Seth MacFarlane's style and may not necessarily have his political leanings, put that way.
Yeah.
True.
Just a thought.
Yeah. There's been a few. Oh, if he can, you know, make jokes about that, you know, whether they land or not is it a completely different matter, you know, entirely. But oh, if he can make jokes like that, then, you know, so can we. And is it no? It would be better for everyone if he didn't.
Agreed.
Yes.
Cool. So, is there any other bits and bobs that you want to say about Discovery or Orville or anything?
Not at the moment.
Other than they're rather good and everyone should go watch.
Yeah.
I mean, I think with Discovery as well, it's because it's a brand new kind of time period as well. So, because I think it is, you know, set like a decade or so before Kirk and whatnot.
Yes.
Yes.
So. We've basically got like a, you know, kind of empty space to fill, where there could be anything in a way, and it's kind of nice for them to kind of bring back stuff like the Mirror Universe and the Terran Empire and, you know, Mud and whatnot, and, you know, even if they do it slightly differently, like with the Klingons and whatnot, then it's still kind of heading towards like a really, you know, kind of cool thing.
Yeah, definitely.
We like sci-fi. Yeah,
we do like sci-fi.
Yes,
but sci-fi we also like sci-fi, and, you know, the purpose of sci-fi, which isn't just big explosions and whatnot, but kind of ask kind of deeper philosophical questions in a way.
Yeah, and that was one of my issues with the idea of Orville, because if it was just, you know, the USS Cockshot. Going around making fart and knob gags, then I wouldn't have been interested. But he's got a lot of, you know, original, you know, Next Generation alumni.
Yes.
Along, and a lot of the episodes are weirdly thoughtful. So yeah, I wouldn't have been on board, so to speak.
Yes, fair enough. Cool.
Excellent.
I'm also coughing my arse off in between muting the mic here.
Okay. Anyway, I think the natural drop-off point has been reached here, so I think it's time to say goodnight. So, goodnight from?
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm retroid on Eurogamer.net and super retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul aka Cookie. You can find me on Twitter as onearmed_cookie.
It's good night for me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter at Paul Blewett. You can find show notes over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. Not entirely sure how many show notes we're going to have, but they're going to be there. So you can also find us on Stitcher,
Google Plus.
Are we still on there?
It's trying. Yeah. Instagram?
iTunes. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter.
Instagram.
Instagram, yes.
All popular subspace frequencies.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's it. So, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Rock, KLS.